Okay, I guess it's time to start. Well, welcome to Developer's Guide to Free Open Source Licenses. And in a way, a little bit about background about this talk. It's in a way a reaction to a talk I've seen a while ago. It has been a lightning talk, and which gave incredibly bad advice, I thought, about open source licenses. So it was about creating your own license in a way. And during this talk, I like to establish that, for example, that is quite a bad idea usually. That's a basic idea behind this talk. And first, a little bit of background about myself as a person, because usually it's not very common for developers to talk about legal stuff. I've been a software engineer, a developer in specifically the area of open source software for now about 10 years. At some point, I've been working as a community coordinator for a larger open source project, which usually involves people coming to you and asking about really anything that has to do with open source and about licenses. That's certainly part of it. I've done some FLOSS recommendations and consulting for companies. And finally, it's something I'm still doing, that I'm in a few groups of the Aperio Foundation. The Aperio Foundation, if you have never heard about it, it's a legal entity, or so it's a nonprofit organization as a legal entity for a set of open source projects, very much alike the Free Software Foundation or the Apache Foundation. I'm an incubation member, mentor there. I'm helping new projects to get started, to get the basics right, and to get integrated in this organization. I don't have a strict legal background, but I still have to somehow deal with all of this. And that's a little bit what this talk is about. This is a very common phrase, I guess, if you've ever searched for anything related to legal stuff on the internet. You will certainly find that basically every post starts with, I'm not a lawyer, but. In a way, of course, that's true. I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not supposed to be a lawyer. And I guess most of you aren't lawyers, but developers or someone interested in open source. We don't have to be perfect, and that's not the goal of this talk to, I don't know, give you a degree in law. That simply won't work, because you can study law if you want to, but But still, it's something that I would like to say that I'm not trying to talk any nonsense here. You can still basically do something which I, as a developer, would call a best effort approach. So at least we can try to avoid critical situations and make relatively good decisions in the first place, so that it doesn't turn out that at each corner there is a critical problem which turns up regarding the legal issues of open source. So we can already do a lot of good stuff by just making some smart decision based on a little bit of knowledge, and this is really what this talk is about. So you, as a developer, should be able to kind of know when you deal with licenses. So I have a project which has this license. What other libraries, for example, can I use? And another thing is, of course, being able to select a license for a project you start, which, well, it's something that a developer usually does, or often does. Not always, but often does. And so having a little bit of background knowledge about this really makes sense. But I also like to stress something, and there are a lot of special cases, of course, and if there really is a special case, don't necessarily try to be smart, but go ahead and ask a lawyer, because they've started this, they have a lot more knowledge. I mean, we are developers, and I don't know, if you have a business model based on integrating some proprietary license with open source, and you aren't really sure how these licenses interact with each other, I mean, you can take the risk and build your business model on your knowledge. But at some, for example, like this, it kind of makes sense to get legal advice. So really, this is about a best effort approach, and I think you can cover a lot with that. It's not about any really special cases. So we try to establish basically some basic knowledge. And the first thing I want to talk about is why do we need this license anyway? And the funny thing is that when talking with developers about licenses and about how should I approach licensing when it comes to projects and stuff like that, a lot of people say, well, I don't really care. And this is very often the case, especially if you have a smaller project, then I don't really care how it's used. So if people want this, I'll just put it online so people can find it useful. Why do you need a license? And the concept of having no license is something that people sometimes think means that everyone can use it. But that's not necessarily true, because you can have and often do have some restrictions on stuff that just someone put online because of some usually local laws. And so really, if there's something online which doesn't have a license, this usually means that you can't use it at all in any projects. So if there's a library, for example, I can't just include that in my project. There can be consequences of that. And that's the funny thing here, as a lot of these projects without a license, people often intend to make it open, but they really don't. So yeah, having a license definitely makes sense. So if you think a little bit about licenses, then you're wondering, what does this license thing entail in the end? And really, if you think about it, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is that we talk about requirements of a license. So if you look online at any license, or if you talk about license, you often talk about, well, if you want to use software which has a license, let's say the GPL, then there are certain restrictions and requirements here if the user has to meet, because so that you can use it. And yes, that's certainly true. For example, when we talk about GPL, then there's certainly the restriction that if you hand over your project based on a GPL something and hand it over as a binary source, then you also need to redistribute source code. So this is a restriction put on any user by this license. And of course, as a developer, as someone who starts this project, I can make use of these requirements to, for example, for GPL, you would usually say that the requirement that the source code has to be provided as well would, well, ensure openness or ensure freedom. At least that's what the Free Software Foundation always said is the whole GPL concept is about. So you, as someone who chooses this license, can use these restrictions for your purpose and can make use of it that it fits your project. And this is certainly a strong point about licenses. But the thing is, and that's something I find is often forgotten, it's not the only thing licenses are about. Because not only are there requirements these licenses come with, but also you have some insurances usually. And insurances mean that, for example, let's stay with the GPL. If I hand you a piece of software which is licensed GPL, then you can use it today, and you can use it tomorrow, and you can use it in 10 years still. And I, as a developer who handed you this, cannot just say, well, I've decided to make it closed source now, and you have to stop using this. So that's not how things work. So yes, there are some requirements which come with licenses, but there are also insurances. And these insurances, from a perspective of someone who uses open source, and even as a developer, I mean, I'm using open source all the time, but of course, everyone today pulls in a lot of libraries today. I mean, that's how development today works. No one starts from scratch with assembler. Everyone pulls in everything, basically, today. It would be horrible if I start a big project on something and then 2 years later someone says, well, you can't use my library anymore. And it's a foundation for my project, so my project would die at that point. And it's funny because a while ago I've worked for a company which had a had some hardware which came with an SDK and some proprietary terms attached to this SDK, which was kind of necessary to use this hardware, and had in it included terms like, well, at any point of time the creator of this SDK can decide that you may not for future purpose redistribute this any longer. So basically, we can say that you can't use it at all anymore, and your business case is void. And having license which actually ensures that this cannot happen is a really powerful thing. So if you think about it that way as a developer, then licenses do not only become this horrible thing we have to deal with, but also ensure that we actually can work with stuff not only today, but in the future. And looking at this this way really makes licensing a little bit more fun than just having to deal with legal stuff. At least that's for me, and that's why I not like to deal with it, but at least I see that it's necessary, and it's a good thing to spend this half an hour to think about a license for a new project. So this is about licenses in general. And now I thought I wanted to end upbeat, so I start with bad ideas and come to good ideas. So I've brought you a few examples of things you really shouldn't try to do. I mean, there are always edge cases where these things might make sense, but in general, these are bad ideas. So when we start, well, I've already said at the beginning that custom licenses are usually bad ideas. Why is this usually a bad idea? Well, first of all, we all are not lawyers, and coming up with good license terms which do not offend any local laws or interact badly with other licenses is not always that easy. So making an error there could be bad, and yeah, that's not our expertise, so we shouldn't try to do that. Another good point is that if we talk about the regular licenses, well, everyone kind of knows how to deal with them. And also, even if I don't know, I usually can find resources without consulting a lawyer about these licenses. So I can find tons of information about licenses like MIT or Apache or GPL online. And I can find, and that's something we'll see later on, really good summaries of these licenses so that I don't have to read through all the terms and stuff like that. That's not true for custom licenses anymore, because that's something I have to read. That's something, if I want to use this, I have to evaluate, and not evaluate once, but basically evaluate against all the other licenses out there of dependencies I use. So it becomes quite complex, even if you, as someone who creates a custom license, just spend 5 minutes to add one sentence because I felt like it. So whatever you do, please avoid custom licenses. There are seldom any reasons for a custom license, especially in the field of open source software, because there are already a lot of well-established open source licenses out there, and well-established license with several different use cases. So selecting one of those really helps a lot, really helps all of your users, because it makes projects really a lot easier to use. And again, usually there's no need for a custom license, because there's probably something which fits you. I mean, that's not all. Another term which is sometimes used is non-commercial in licenses. And I can well understand the idea behind this. But first of all, and maybe the obvious one, is usually a non-commercial clause makes your software not free software anymore. So both, I mean, you can argue which interpretation is the correct one, the free software interpretation of the Free Software Foundation or the open source interpretation of the open source initiative. But whatever way you go, non-commercial is not recognized by any of these and is usually incompatible with basically all, well, not if not all open source licenses. And there's another reason not to go for a non-commercial, because defining what is commercial use and what's non-commercial use isn't often that as easy as you would expect to be, because imagining the use case of a university. I mean, we are here at a university. They do lectures. They teach students, and usually would say, "Well, that's probably non-commercial use." But if you think about universities, there are also funded research projects often at these universities, so they get money for doing some work, and this is what you would often call commercial use. And there's no definite line between this non-commercial and commercial at an institution like this, because you have students maybe helping out with this research project, people from these research projects teaching. And so there's a lot of gray area in this non-commercial field. And maybe a short story of what I would consider an extreme case of people saying that's a commercial use is quite a few years ago, I think about, I don't know, 10, 11 years ago, when I was still using Delphi. Some people may remember that. It was an IDE for Object Pascal from Borland, and there were some, at that time, not so small communities around this, and there was something called Delphi Personal Edition. So an IDE which was nice, which you could use for personal, non-commercial use. And there was some discussion in the community about what this non-commercial actually meant. And since the community had a very well established line, basically, to Borland, they asked Borland and basically their lawyers to get a proper explanation about this. And the interesting perspective from Borland, or their response, was, well, Of course, you can use it to build your own software and use it for your own use. But if you already put it up on your website, well, you're basically endorsing or make you're advertising yourself, and that can basically raise your value. So that's already commercial use, even though I would not get any money directly for this. I'm handing out the software, this Compile software, for free. And I'm not sure if they would have won any court cases with that interpretation, but I think it shows how far such an interpretation can go and why it may not always be a good idea to have this commercial clause. A good alternative to these commercial clauses is often to use stricter GPL-type licenses, which ensure that you can always get to any modified source code. So even if some company grabs your code and modifies this and try to sell it as a product, you still have access to this. It's still publicly available, and you can say, well, either now I start selling it myself and can say, hey, I'm the original author, so you can hand off to your money to this weird entity which tries to sell this, or you can hand the same money to me. And this is something that often works better than non-commercial clauses. So, second bad idea, custom licenses and non-commercial. And in a way, this is an honorable mention, especially because it's about software. Creative Commons is something which is very well established in the line of licenses, of media licenses, I should say. And it's very popular on the internet. They did an extremely great job, or so I think, when it comes to licensing in general. They made very good licenses. They made the accompanying websites very easy to understand how these licenses work. But the thing is, all of the Creative Commons licenses are not meant for software. And I've just quoted the FAQ to say, there are better ways to license something than Creative Commons. And the thing is, if you look at any of the bigger open source foundations out there, for example, Apache or Free Software Foundation, they usually have a list of compatible licenses with their license, so GPL or Apache. And really, basically none of the Creative Commons licenses are what they consider to be compatible with their licenses. So they are not very well used in the area of software. So please do avoid that. And really, the only license that would be recognized by those entities is actually CC0, which is the license I'm not sure if I've ever seen it in action. It's very much like a public domain. All the usual ones are usually bad ideas for software. Although, really, I'd like to stress, for media, they're great licenses, just not for software. So, I think that's enough about bad ideas. So let's take a look at what are actually good recommendations or good ideas for licenses and for licensing. And one of the most obvious things I would say is use one of the big licenses out there. For me it sounds obvious, but it's when you think about these custom licenses I mentioned earlier, it's the same argument here. If you go with one of the big licenses, then it's very likely that a lot of developers already know this license and know how to handle this, know how to deal with it. If I'm part of a bigger open source project, they often have lists of licenses which do work with your own license. That makes this very easy for developers. to handle project license like this. And I don't know, for example, the biggest open source book I just currently work in, if someone came to me and asked me, can I use the MIT license? Well, that's a no-brainer for me. I can just say yes, because I've encountered it probably 100 times in our dependencies, and I really know that that's okay. But if someone comes with a very small or very weird license, then, well, I don't know. And you need to try to find out if that's okay or not. So it's a very good idea to just pick one of the big licenses. And even there, you have usually enough variety so that you can pick whatever direction you want to go in. So yeah, that's the first one. And I've brought some data with me. This is actually a few years old, so it's from 2015. It's based on GitHub's data for licenses. So of all of the GitHub projects out there, if you look at it, more than 3/4 of it are basically covered by 3 licenses. Well, actually, technically these are 4 licenses, because these are GPL 2 and 3. So yeah, they're 2 iterations of kind of the same license. But if you're strict, of course, these are 2 licenses. But still, more than 3/4. And if you just roughly know what these are about, you already know what most of the projects on GitHub use. So that's really nice. And if you can pick one of these big licenses, then the chances are very, very high that other people know how to deal with your project as well. So again, a very good idea. Another thing is if you are operating in a special community or a special field of interest, then it may be that a big license globally is not a big license in your local community. A very good example is NPM. If you look at licenses of any of the NPM, so of any of the JavaScript libraries, then you have a very high chance that these are licensed, one of 2 licenses, these are MIT or AC, without actually say so. I actually don't have any data to back this up. It's just my guess from looking at projects that most are actually today using MIT. And if you build something in a community like that, where you see, okay, everyone else does this, it's often a good idea to do the same if you don't have any special reason to do something else. So just go with what the others use as well. You're pretty safe doing that. And yeah, I mean, of course, there can be a special case where you need something from which only another license provides, but for a lot of projects, yeah, just go with what your community uses. And from experience and talking about with other people, especially with smaller projects, I think it's often that people don't really care about the specifics of licensing, and so picking just the license which everyone else uses is a good idea there. So yeah, these are 2 ideas to go with. Yeah, another thing is, of course, that you should think a little bit about the use case where your software is used, because licenses software, I mean, we've talked earlier about restrictions, and especially if you think about these restrictions, there can be some problems when you pick a certain license and want to use it in a certain context. Let me give you an example. If you pick GPL, one of the most common or most obvious, I would say, features about GPL is that it's a copyleft license. So if you modified the code, then you still need to use the same license for these modifications. And in fact, of GPL, So not LGPL, but GPL. If you use a library which is GPL licensed, so include it in any way in your project, then your project needs to become GPL as well. So if you want to write a license, a library, which you hope that a lot of people want will use this, and you want this to be used in a lot of different projects. Well, licensing it GPL makes it incompatible with a lot of projects and a lot of use cases. So, yeah, just giving it a little bit of thought. If you really need this restriction, really makes sense in these cases, and in a lot of cases, I would say for libraries, GPL isn't the best license out there, for example. Obviously, again, there can be special cases. There can be the case that, yeah, you really want to ensure that, I don't know, freedom spreads or something like that is probably what the GNU folks would say. Then you can pick that, but usually I would say it's not. So think a little bit about the use case. Look around you and use one of the big licenses. These are really things to consider when it comes to all of these licenses, and which are usually good ideas. A final remark on good ideas is less about picking your license, more about making it easy to find and identify your project as being under a specific license for other people. Because, as I said, I'm working in open source for quite a while now. I've had to evaluate a lot of different libraries and check if they're okay for us to use. People came to me with licenses and other projects, which I kind of had to decide if that's okay. And it's always really awful if you can't just look at it and see what the license is. So sometimes people tend to put it, I don't know, on a sub page on their website or packaged in their Tor ball. So you need to download and basically install the app to find out what the license is. That's very, unhelpful, I would say. So please try to avoid that, and good recommendations are usually if you have any project which lives in Git or GitHub or Bitbucket or GitLab, having a simple license file is usually a good idea, because that's where really all of the projects put their licenses. So you can just take a look at that and know what the license is. And another thing which is kind of based on this is that if you look at the big platforms like GitHub, if you apply your license properly, they will actually pick up your license and display that as part of the information about your project. And ensuring that this works, and that's usually not hard to do, because again, they're usually just scanning these licensing files. But ensuring that this works really helps, because I can just go to the GitHub page, look at the top right corner, see, okay, this is licensed, I don't know, Apache version 2, and then I know what legal stuff I have to deal with or not. To sum up the good ideas here, really pick one of the big ones, look around here, think a little bit about the use cases, and finally, make sure that people can find your license. And really, if you turn it around, don't try to build anything special if you can avoid that. For this talk, I don't want to go into specifics, or at least not into too many specific licenses, because really, if I now go to, I don't know, 10 or 20 licenses, and yes, there are 100 licenses out there, you will probably just forget that. So really, I have some links at the end of tools or a list where you can find out a little bit more about licenses. But I just want to highlight the two biggest ones, which are MIT and GPL. And maybe I give Apache an honorable mention. So let's talk about the most popular one according to GitHub, that's MIT. MIT is really one of the simplest licenses that you can apply, which has barely any restrictions. So if you say, well, I don't really care how my code is used, MIT is actually a good choice. The only restriction is that if someone uses your code and includes that and redistributes that, there needs to be the copyright notice preserved and the license preserved. So this is the full set of requirements, basically. Not very strict. It's also very short, so I could have probably put the whole license here on the slide. That's definitely not true for other licenses like Apache or like GPL. And it's a very good choice if you just don't really care how people use the project. You just want it to be usable. And yeah, so this is the license number one. And as an honorable mention, if you look at the Apache license, or specifically Apache version 2, which was the other big license in there in GitHub, or the third one, the biggest one, if you combine GPL version 2 and 3, it's funny that it's probably 10 times the length of the MIT license, but the terms and conditions are roughly the same. So it's a lot more detailed, a lot of, I don't know, let's say lawyer talk. There are a few special things when it comes to usage of patents and of trademarks. But it's roughly the same, but that's just an under mention because it's often that you encounter Apache. So really the hard restrictions are usually, again, that you need to include the copyright notice and the license. And the second one, and this is really a set of licenses because there is this ranges from the lesser strict LGPL to the very strict AGPL, and of course there's the GPL, just has a different idea about licensing. And the big idea here is that you have a copyleft license, which means that if you modify the code, if you add some new code to this project, then this new code should be redistributed under the same terms. So if I add some code to a GPL project, this code would also be GPL licensed, or needs to be GPL licensed automatically. And this is something that has a special purpose, of course, because in a way that ensures that this still is open even if people redistribute this. So no one can really say, okay, I'm not closing this. I forgot, by the way, another restriction on this is that if someone hands someone a copy of this project in a binary form, it always needs to also include the source code, or at least the person getting this binary form needs to be able to get the source code, so you don't necessarily have to hand it over at the same time, but they should be able to get this specific version of the source code. And these two things together ensure that even if you hand this over and other people modify this, you can still basically, everyone who gets this binary project has access to the source code, and no one really can decide, okay, no, I'm closing this project, I'm just redistributing the binary form, I'm selling the binary form, but do not hand out the source code. So this is one of the main big ideas behind GPL, and that's what Free Software Foundation usually calls ensuring freedom, because no one can close it down. Of course, this puts some more restrictions on the use. So you can argue that, well, it has more restrictions than MIT, so it's less free, but these are really philosophical arguments I don't want to go into. A short mention about the difference between LGPL, GPL, and AGPL. If you start with the less stricter one, so if you take, let's start with GPL. If you take GPL, build a library as GPL, and then someone else includes that library, this license is basically infectious, and it infects the main project as well. So the main project also needs to be GPL. LGPL is less strict in the sense that, yes, if someone really modifies this core project, then the same license applies. But if someone is basically just using that, including this as a library, then it doesn't apply, and you can still license your main project differently. And going to the other extreme, if you again look at GPL, I need to hand you the source code. If I hand you the binary, and if you take, I mean, GPL is a few years old now, and back at the days where people would distribute software by, I don't know, handing over floppy disks, you would always have this binary form and then the source code. But in today's day and age, a lot happens in the cloud, whatever you call cloud, but it means that people usually just using software, they are not running the software themselves anymore. And while GPL means that you only need to hand over the source code when you hand over the binary, AGPL takes this a step further. And if you're a user of a project which is licensed AGPL, you should be able to get access to the source code, even if it's run in by company on some cloud infrastructure or whatever. So I don't know, if Facebook runs an AGPL project, I can ask Facebook to give me the code. So it's the other extreme. And yeah, so just knowing this little bit about the ideas behind GPL, I think already helps to understand what these licenses are about. Yeah, and then knowing a little bit about MIT, which I guess is the most popular one, already helps a lot when it comes to licenses, when going around GitHub and learning or looking at different projects. So, yeah, that's it for examples, because, yeah, again, you probably are bored already, and I don't want to bore you with specifics for 1,000 different projects. Instead, I want to go through a few resources, which you basically, if you forget everything I said earlier, because you start to doze off because I'm talking too long, I don't know. This is what you can look up later, and which are resources which really help you to simply and easily find out about what some specific license is about, or something which helps you select a license and stuff like that. So first project which definitely should get a mention is choosealicense.com. It's a project started by GitHub, which does a great job of really summarizing licenses. So it tells you, well, the conditions for this license are, and then you get just a few bullet points and not a long legal text. Of course, there are special cases. It's basically the same thing with as we have with this talk. But for getting an idea what a license is about, that's a very good website. And it provides as well a kind of a license picker. So if you go to that website, you will see that, okay, your intention behind this project is this. Well, you want to pick this license. Your intention behind this project is this other thing. Well, you want to pick that license. You're part of a community, and this is one of your communities. Well, you might want to go with this license. So they really help in both choosing a license, and if you want to know specifics about a license, again, it really helps. And even though the summaries are, I think, also part of GitHub, so if you click on a license in GitHub, at least the short ones identified by GitHub, then you will also get these summaries. So definitely a great resource and basically the go-to website, I would say, when it comes to all these licenses. If you're part of a specific organization, like for example Apache, all these organizations often have lists of compatible licenses when it comes to their license. So if you are using, for example, the Apache license, you can just go to the website of the Apache Foundation, and they have a list of licenses which they had lawyers check that they are really compatible. So if any other project is mentioned, or the license of any other project is mentioned in this list, it's pretty safe to just use that. So this is also a very good resource. And of course, it's not only the Apache Software Foundation which has something like that, but you can also go to the Free Software Foundation's website and they have a list like that. So again, if you're using GPL, you would go there and then check which projects or which licenses are okay and which are not. Again, that really helps, though usually if you played around or you read through this once or twice, when it comes to the big license, you usually know that after you go there once or twice, because they are so common, and that's again a reason for picking one of these big ones, that you see them all the time. So still, these licenses are good, especially when it comes to less common ones. And then I'd like to mention a project which, to be honest, I only found out about this project I think 1.5 weeks ago. So I haven't tried this too much, and I was wondering if I should mention it at all or not. And in the end, I decided to just talk about being a little bit cautious with this, but it seems to do a great job. But there are also, there's a restriction of only being allowed to, without paying them, to scan 5 projects. But still, they do a great job of scanning all your dependencies and building a good report and identifying possible license problems in your dependencies. And if you have especially a big project, I thought it can be helpful, so I'm mentioning them here. Just scan your project, which if it's hosted on GitHub, and you see if they find something. And indeed, the project I tried this on, I identified really one license which was clearly incompatible with the license the project uses. So in the project, there's an open discussion right now how to get away from that, because it's a clear legal issue, for example. So I thought I just mentioned this. If you manage to doze off at any time during this talk, the two key takeaways for this talk, I guess, are these. First of all, yes, please apply a license. Please do not just leave your code on GitHub without any license, because it basically makes this project unusable for everyone. And if you really don't care, my recommendation is just, I don't know, pick MIT attaches, don't think about it too much, and that's okay. But whatever you do, please apply a license. And if you want to choose a license, it's a really good idea to pick one of the big ones out there. So if you remember nothing else, these are 2 points which are well remembered, I think. Yeah, that's it. So I hope you've learned a little bit about licensing. And I hope you've learned that you don't need to be a legal expert to make a good effort. Again, there are special cases where we definitely need lawyers, I think. even though I'd like to avoid them. but yes, there you can make an effort and avoid a lot of problems if you just try to do a good job of deciding what licenses to use and if you check once if you can use a project. That's it.